You're listening to a Drishti Point podcast. I'm here with Pandit Tejomaya, who is a priest in the Himalayan tradition of yoga at the lineage of Swami Rama. He is a yoga teacher who was born in North America and currently lives in British Columbia on Gabriola Island. He teaches yoga both in British Columbia as well as around the world, and I'm so honored to have him here on Drishti Point to speak specifically about the practice of yoga and the practice of the yamas and niyamas. So welcome, Pandit.
Thank you so much.
So maybe we can start off by understanding, where do the yamas and niyamas come from? What are they? How do they relate to yoga? And if you can contextualize what the yamas and niyamas are all about.
Absolutely, absolutely. Whenever I engage in some practice of yoga, I try and discipline myself to come back to keeping it in its context. So the context is yoga. What is yoga? Yoga has become perhaps something different than what Patanjali originally intended for it to be in our wonderful modern society. But if we look back to the Yoga Sutras, second sutra, first chapter, yoga's citta vritti nirodha. So yoga is the mastery or the control of the fluctuations of the mind. Another sutra that is very helpful for me is the 13th sutra from the first chapter, which speaks about the term practice. What does it mean then to practice yoga? The term practice is abhyasa. So practice then is doing those things or engaging in those endeavors that help us control the fluctuations of the mind or bring stillness into the mind. So this whole idea of causing stillness, intentionally bringing about stillness, is very much the work, the focus of yoga. What we're trying to bring stillness to are what are referred to as the vrittis. So yoga's citta vritti nirodha, the vrittis are what we are seeking to gain mastery over. So without going into tremendous detail, it's again in the first chapter of the sutras, there are five vrittis referred to as valid proofs: perverse cognition, imaginary cognition, sleep, and memory. Some of these are helpful, some of these are not helpful. Some of them that are helpful are referred to as aklishta, and non-helpful is the klishta. The non-helpful ones, another way of a term for referring to them is the kleshas.
Mm-hmm. So vrittis that are helpful can help induce a way of coming to stillness.
Absolutely.
And vrittis that are not helpful actually might cause disturbances or obstacles to coming to that place of stillness.
Absolutely. They stimulate the gunas and create havoc, essentially. The kleshas are referred to both in the first and the second chapter of the sutras. These are ignorance, ego, attachment, aversion, and fear. Okay? The five kleshas. So coming to some understanding and mastery of these is essential if our aim is to gain mastery over the fluctuations of our mind. So the question also then becomes, where did these kleshas come from? We are born with them, but we cultivate them throughout our lives. Mm-hmm. This is the process of karma. This is the process of karma then resulting in samskaras. So if I have some propensity for fear or anger or attachment that I came into this existence with, every time I act according to that impulse, I strengthen it. Every time I act out of fear, I increase my ability to act in fear. Every time I act in through ego, etc. The analogy that was helpful to me is this analogy of a bit of a mud puddle. So the non-helpful vrittis are like little clumps of dirt. And every time I act, either through physical action, through thought, or through my speech, it's as though I take a little clump of that dirt and throw it into a pile. each time I act in a helpful way with one of the helpful vrittis, it's as though I'm pouring water onto that same pile.
Mm, which would make a big difference.
Between the two of these, I get a mud puddle, though. Okay? So the mud puddle is mine. Okay. I have created this through all of my actions. The task in life is to work through my karma, to perhaps diminish, or if I'm lucky enough, end the muddy the dirty contributions, should I say, and keep adding the purity of the clear water, the clean water, the clean water, the clean water. Okay? How do we go about doing this? Yamas and niyamas.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? This is my path, the path that I've been engaged in for quite a few years now. It's a very long experience. Yamas and niyamas are described by Patanjali in the second chapter under the heading of the Ashtanga Yoga, the eight limbs of yoga. But they're often forgotten, it seems, right? Unless we're having scholarly discussions.
Mm-hmm.
But all of my formative years of yoga, I would ask teachers about yamas and niyamas, and they'd say, oh, they're very important. You should practice them.
And yet there's little mention of them in any classes.
Exactly. And the guidance, you should practice them, period.
What does that mean?
Exactly. What does that mean? So when I would try to study them diligently, and I'd have 10 of these things in my head, 5 yamas, 5 niyamas, and I'd think, practice them, my head would blow up. It's too much. Mm-hmm. Too much. Hmm? So years later, I had to break them down and come at them a little bit more systematically, a little bit more intentionally, one by one. Hmm? The yamas as a set, the first limb of yoga, are referred to the restraints. Hmm? So these are things that we don't do.
Things that we try to avoid doing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
To protect ourselves.
Absolutely. And the niyamas then, the prefix ni, these are actions that we do. Right, so things that we try to incorporate into our lives. By restraining with the niyama, with the yamas, I am seeking to stop the process of adding dirt into my mud puddle.
Mm-hmm.
By doing the niyamas, these positive works, I am increasing the purity of adding that image of water into my karmic mud puddle. So the process of engaging systematically in the practice of yamas and niyamas, for me, is taking control of my karmic future. Hmm? I have to manage my karmic past. There's nothing I can do to erase it.
And when you say karmic past, are you just referring to the reality of the conditions of our life, to accept that they come from karma, they come from something we've created?
Absolutely. The reality of the conditions of my life as I have created them.
Mm-hmm.
All of the suffering in my life, I created, consciously or unconsciously. Right? These aren't necessarily willful acts. It's me being guided by these seemingly insurmountable odds that push me in a particular direction. Those are the habits that I've created in my mind through years and years, lifetimes, for people who are open to those concepts, lifetimes of practice, of engaging in fear and aversion and attraction and ego.
So the restraint, you said, is a way of taking control of the karmic future.
Mm.
So is a way of projecting or creating or causing conditions that will be helpful for us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Step one would be to understand my karmic present. Mm. So if I'm going to engage with the practice of yamas, first of the yamas, ahimsa. Perhaps my favorite topic in all of yoga. I have said this semi-jokingly, but in the inside I'm very serious. If I were a skilled enough teacher, I would teach nothing but ahimsa. It is that powerful of a practice.
I often think if you perfect just that one, you've perfected all of yoga.
Game over. Exactly. Ahimsa, properly and fully engaged in, is the perfection of love. But we have to start simply. Mm-hmm. We always have to start where we are at, rather than aspiring to be Gandhi. Mm-hmm. Gandhi had to aspire to be Gandhi at some point. Right? So we start very, very simply. We start with the gross and move to the subtle, with all of these practices.
So gross meaning, it seems that many people in the North American context, we don't have to restrain ourselves from physically harming others, but it might be through speech that
yes.
is more subtle than the physical, and then working with the layer of mind as well.
Yes. Swami Rama spoke about the need for discipline in all yogic endeavors mm-hmm. as a prerequisite almost. We need to have at least a small capacity for discipline or progress really will not significantly occur. Mm-hmm. And he spoke about disciplining ourselves in three areas: speech, action, and mind, just as you said. Mm-hmm. So when I began this practice, I chose to begin at the level of speech, knowing that I would ultimately be working on my mind, but I wanted to separate this and say, okay, if I've still got issues in my mind, I'm going to acknowledge that for now, but I will discipline myself at the layer of speech to begin with. So contemplating the idea of ahimsa, I would pick up various sacred texts that I have to find out what the scholars have said on the topic, educate myself as to various insights into ahimsa, and then sit down in a contemplative exercise and look at my life. How do I need to engage within my life to move closer to this state known as ahimsa? I don't engage in physical violence with other human beings. I'm very grateful for that. There are many in the world who do. Mm-hmm. And that is not my issue at the moment. I live a vegetarian life. I'm very happy about that. So I don't need to engage at that level. I chose to engage at the level of speech. So speech, how could speech be an expression of ahimsa? I chose to discipline myself by eliminating all negative words from my speech. So I made an intention that for a 21-day period, I would eliminate all negativity from my speech.
And negativity in context of speaking about others, or all negativity in general?
All negativity.
So any words like but, don't, can't, shouldn't.
The interesting part about the practice is I didn't know what would constitute negativity
uh-huh.
when I began.
Okay.
I had no ground rules, so it forced me into a very meaningful way of mindfulness.
So were you checking with your heart in terms of the intention behind a word or phrase?
Not yet. I would listen to the words as they came out.
Okay.
Hoping to filter them before they would come out. If I would have a negative thought, rather than saying that person's a jerk, I could think it at this point of the practice, but I wouldn't utter the words.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Negation as a linguistic tool can be helpful, right, as for,
yes.
for clarification and those types of things.
Yes.
So it was really more of something derogatory,
mm-hmm.
right? In that sense of negativity. So 21 days, but 21 consecutive days. So each day that I would make a mistake, I would go back to day one.
Mm-hmm.
Each day that I would make a mistake and go back to day one, I would stop, observe the mistake, and seek to identify which of the kleshas was active at that moment.
Oh, interesting.
That gave rise to the negativity.
And the kleshas were the five, were ego, fear,
aversion,
attraction,
and ignorance.
Ignorance, okay.
Uh-huh. So there, I had a very real example in my life, no theory. Something had just happened in my life. I could see the external stimulant, go inside, see the internal repository of my karmic debt or my kleshas. So that external stimulant ran up against my ego or my fear or my aversion, and it filtered up through me and came out as some negative speech.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I see.
Go back to day one. Start again. armed with a little bit more knowledge of my internal workings.
Now, did that practice begin to then chip away at those five
Absolutely. Absolutely. Over time, I would begin to see patterns. Okay? So, for example, one of the patterns that I would see within myself, my kleshic makeup, was fear. Not big fears, not fear of people wearing black coats or anything, subtle things, very, very subtle things that would influence my mind and therefore then my speech. So when I began to see a pattern of kleshas versus an isolated incident, I would step back and again study the sutras to say, what does yoga offer me in this situation? And there's a series of sutras in the second chapter that speak about how to deal with the kleshas. Step one is to try and attenuate them. So we don't eliminate them yet. That's too grand of an aspiration to begin with. We soften them, attenuating them by cultivating opposite principles. So if I would see a pattern...
So like an anecdote.
If I would see a pattern of fear, I would either challenge that fear or laugh at that fear. Something to cultivate the opposite mindset so that the next time I was facing a similar external stimulant, fear would not be the response.
So you were habituating your mind to a different response.
Absolutely. The first round of the practice, I began with ahimsa. I moved on to satya, the second of the yamas, and I worked my way through all five of these.
How long did that take?
2.5 years.
Unbelievable.
2.5 years of magnificent work. I shared it with friends, with close friends. There are some aspects of our practice that are best kept personal.
Yes.
But some aspects of the practice, I believe, need to be shouted from rooftops. Like, let's pay attention to yamas in the yamas, people.
Yes.
So I would be walking through the grocery store and a friend would come up to me and say, how's your practice going? What day are you on? What have you learned lately?
Mm.
So it became almost a community process that people were supporting me in the practice.
That's very beautiful.
After the first round, 2.5 years at the level of speech, I went back and repeated the practice at the level of speech and action. Third round of the practice, speech, action, mind. 21 consecutive days without a negative thought.
Incredible.
It's possible.
Incredible.
It is absolutely possible if you choose for it to happen and you discipline yourself.
And do you feel that you are a different person on the inside? That your mind is transformed through the practice?
Completely. And yet... completely is too strong of a word because that implies that I'm finished. I am not finished. I am transforming still. The practice continues, absolutely continues. I'm still working at the level of attenuating my kleshas. They are much softer than they were 7 years ago when I began this practice.
And it seems to me that when there's... less obstacles, there's more receptivity or room for all the goodness that exists all around us that we aren't sensitive to because we're full of other stuff.
Enter the niyamas. So different discipline. It's not a restraint, it's a do. So shaucha, purity, cleanliness. Again, observe my life. Pick something to work on. Shaucha has to do with both a physical state of purity as well as internal state of purity of the mind. So one could perhaps pick a practice of engaging with neti wash if some sort of physical cleansing was something you needed to bring into your life. Beautiful practice. I again began to work at the level of speech. 21 days, because this is not a yama, I wasn't punishing myself for making mistakes. I was incorporating something positive. So doing. 21 days where all of my words aspired to be pure. What does that even mean? So again, every word that would come out of my mouth, I would just observe and say, was that pure? Could that be more pure? To my disappointment, much of my humor started to fade away. I had friends that we used to engage in wonderful sarcasm. That's not very pure speech. Mm. So as enjoyable as it seemed to be, I started to view it through new eyes.
Yeah. Right?
And start to change these things.
Entertainment is, and our culture in terms of humor is unfortunately very unpure.
Mm, it is. So purity breeds purity, is my experience. Everybody that I know seems to have a habit of brushing their teeth every day. Hmm? And if we wouldn't do that, we could do it for a day, for 2 days or 3 days if we had to, but we wouldn't want to because it would feel yucky.
Yeah.
So we all have an experience of purity. As you engage, as I've engaged in more subtle practices of purity, my sensitivity in that particular area heightens to the point where I wouldn't want to go back to what I didn't realize had been impure in the past.
So sensitivity to your own words, to other people's words, to things that we take in through the sense organs, music, images we see through media.
All of the above. Mm-hmm. All of the above. Media is a big one.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Energy of other people. There's a wonderful story from our tradition of Swami Rama being invited to the house of one of his dear disciples, also an Indian man, and his wife made a meal for Swamiji. Indian housewives, if the guru was coming, pull out all the stops. So all of his favorite dishes were made. Everything that he loved was made. And one of his favorite dishes was a particular way of making spinach. So at the end of the meal, his plate was clean except for the pile of spinach that was left untouched. And Mrs. Arya said to him, Swamiji, is something wrong with the spinach? And he said very politely, he said, I will not eat your anger. She had to think back to the negativity of thought that ran through her briefly as she was making that dish. And he, being who he was sensitive enough to that level of purity that he would not allow the impurity of her thought, which infused that food, to enter into his body.
Unbelievable.
If you engage in these practices, those levels of sensitivities will come.
So, do you feel that you've become more sensitive also in that way?
Mm, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm not as adept, certainly, as Swami Rama, but I have been known to pass on food that is served in, especially in restaurants around here. If you can look at your plate and feel what has gone on in the kitchen, and think, I don't think I need that within me.
Mm-hmm.
And on the days that I've not listened to that or not had the courage because of the company I was in and I didn't want to embarrass anyone so that I would eat the food, the next day in my morning meditation, I would feel the food, the presence of that impurity showing up then in my mind.
Mm-hmm. And is that a feeling thing? It's just
Yes, that often doesn't even manifest into words forming in the mind.
Mm-hmm.
It's just more of an impression,
right? Like an intuition. Incredible. What an incredible practice.
It's a beautiful practice. It is what has transformed a yoga practice for me from something that I did on a mat and a cushion to something that I engage with 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
So, you probably teach a lot of yoga teachers and yoga students, and what you've done may seem out of their realm. So, for people who would like to practice that, what what things are really useful that are realistic mm-hmm. Within the context of how you would teach to your students.
Sure. When I've taught this, even at the ashram, people say, "Oh, it's fine for you, Panditji. You don't have a real job. You this is all that you do. It's easy for you. What about us? We have lives. We have work." That's true, and yet this takes no effort other than my mental acuity, my desire to work in this way, my desire to work towards diminishing kleshas and improving purity and contentment within myself and all of the niyamas. So to start simply is the most important thing, but to start. Mm-hmm. Seek to change at the level of speech is a beautiful practice.
Very
beautiful, beautiful practice. And it will have implications. When you change at the level of speech, you have to engage your mind. Okay? So even if I'm not disciplining myself at the level of mind yet, I'm training my mind by observing the speech. Mm-hmm. So just at the level of speech is wonderful. But I also would encourage people to stay focused on a single, definable, doable task. Mm-hmm. When my first teacher would say, "Practice your yamas and niyamas," and my head would blow up because I couldn't engage in all 10 of those things at once, I engage in one of these at a time. And that is my sole focus for the period of time that I'm working on it. Yeah? 21 days, or as long as it takes me to get 21 consecutive days, if I'm holding myself accountable that way. Mm-hmm. And if I'm working at the level of speech, I don't chastise myself for what goes on in my mind. At the level of mind, for one who wants to get to that level, this was an interesting insight. I saw the difference between the conscious and the subconscious mind. So as I began working at eradicating all negative thoughts from my mind, I could feel intuitively that something would occur in the subconscious mind that didn't manifest into the conscious mind.
Mm-hmm. So would that be like having awareness of a thought, or something different than awareness of a thought? That
pre-thought was the term that I came up with
to describe it. Mm. So before a thought forms into awareness, and the sensitivity would be at the level of thought.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Same relationship between thought and speech. Mm-hmm. You could be aware of something in your mind before it would come out at speech. That's just a grosser level of the same relationship between subconscious and conscious mind.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm.
I have another few months of work to do at the level of mind, and then the next round of the practice will be at the level of the subconscious mind.
Now,
and I have no idea how to do it.
Well, I was just going to ask you, do you notice a change in your dreams?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. The kleshas that are still active appear through my dreams. The nature of the dreams in general has become much more sattvic. If your listeners are familiar with the terms of the gunas, so sattva is that tranquil quality of the universe. My speech, my actions, and my dreams have all taken on much more of a sattvic way of expression, a way of being naturally. I'm very pleased to say that, naturally,
that
way.
Not force, just through the practice.
Yeah, yeah. Earlier on, I would force sattva into my life. Mm-hmm. With good intention, right? Very good intention. We have to start somewhere. But through this practice, through systematically going inside, understanding what the stains are within me, working on them, and very also systematically engaging in the positive aspects of the niyamas, through that combination of these two things, sattva is the natural outcome of these. I've also gained tremendous respect for, an awesome respect for Patanjali, if Patanjali was an individual or a collective, nobody really knows about this, but I'll pretend it was an individual, that the brilliance of the yoga system, absolute brilliance. I need both yama and niyama to progress.
Mm-hmm.
It's more pleasant to engage with niyama. It's more pleasant to do wonderful things, to study scripture, to practice contentment. But if I practice those positive things on a foundation of rottenness,
mm-hmm.
I will not be sustainable. Right? So I need both. I absolutely need both. If, on the other hand, I engage only in the ascetic practices of nonviolence and truthfulness and discipline, without the positive side of the beauty of surrender to the divine, Ishvara Pranidhana, the last of the niyamas, without that covering the whole process, then all of my discipline at holding myself back from the kleshas that still exist in me, it would be meaningless.
Mm-hmm.
So Patanjali's system draws me to both, calls me to both, requires me to do both.
Brilliant. And it sounds to me, which is my experience too, is that I never get tired of reading and practicing and imprinting my mind with these. It almost feels like it gets sweeter the more you understand them and practice them.
Absolutely. We need to study and expose ourselves to these inspirations. Inspirational teachers, inspirational gurus from your lineage and from all lineages, from all traditions. I gain tremendous insights from Jesus, from Buddha, from all of the Himalayan sages. All of them were my teachers and my inspirations. But I am not any of them. I am Tejamaya. I have my kleshas. I have my history that I am called to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So when Gandhi said, be the change you wish to see, rather than calling others to be that change, he was right on. Absolutely right on. This is a very personal practice.
Mm-hmm. It's been such a delight, and it's gone so quickly. I can't believe that our time is almost up, but it's been such a delight to speak about these practices with you.
Thank you so much. It's always a delight to be in your presence.
Thank you. And is there any final things you'd like to say, just to again inspire people to make a commitment to this practice?
The promises of yoga are very real. If you seek enlightenment in this life, it is yours for the taking. Absolutely. All you have to do is engage in the practice. Tell yourself that you can do this, you must do this, and you will do this.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Namaste.